Okay, I open the discussion. Questions, remarks? Anyone? So maybe I'll start. Okay. Socialist, realist, visuality, visual culture, yeah, can be also interpreted in terms of a project or an attempt to establish something like socialist popular culture. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's especially visible when you compare socialist, realist film production with Western film production. There are many models that were kind of borrowed or intercepted, etc., etc. I wonder if the same could be said about the, let's say, socialist consumption society. Mm-hmm. Do you think this term makes any sense? Can we really talk about something like that in analogy to Western consumption society? Was there something like an attempt to create an alternative socialist consumption society, I don't know, in the 40s, 50s, in the Czech Republic, in Czechoslovakia, I mean?
Yeah, well, not in the 50s, it started uh-huh. in the 60s.
In the 60s,
there was a large discussion about the socialist way of life and what would it mean in Czechoslovakia, but it basically ended in after Soviet revolution, Soviet occupation. Mm-hmm. Then there was no theoretical discussion after Soviet occupation. But there was a short period of time in the second half of the 60s about the discussion about the socialist way of life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So what about the very concept of consumption? Was it used in the 40s or 50s or not? Was it like
no,
excluded?
Well, there was a basic concept, which was like the consumption was there was so-called individual consumption and the societal consumption.
Uh-huh.
Societal means that there were like a sponsoring of the public events, like camping for the families and for the schools, and which were basically financed by the companies, large companies, this was some sort of the problem when the economic crisis came to Czechoslovakia in 1962. Then there were discussions if we should just cut this societal consumption and mm-hmm. Let people enjoy the individual
focus
consumption.
On individual. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. You also mentioned like aesthetic aspect, if I understood correctly, that the advertisements were meant to educate people in what is kitsch, what is
yes.
what is agreeable, what should be bought, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that was in this proposal in 1948 by those architects. Uh-huh. But it also appeared at this conference in 1957 that they should like learn people good taste.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
It's good to point out that this idea of the socialist advertising actually failed at the beginning of the 60s, and then there was no discussion about socialist advertising anymore,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
especially in Czechoslovakia because there was a Prague Spring.
Hi, thank you very much. That was very enjoyable and informative. I feel like my question should be something that I can answer, but I hadn't actually thought about it, which was I was interested about the artists that were actually producing this art and whether they produced any other sorts of art. I'm thinking, obviously, you know, famously the pop art movement in the US is Warhol or James Rosenquist or something, or people who are creating advertising images and then using those sort of same styles to create like fine art. And then you have in the Soviet Union, you have artists that are kind of, you know, particularly book illustrations that are also kind of distant artists as well, or are in their forms of art are sort of taking on these images, you know, Komar and Melamed or someone like that are kind of subverting these sort of advertising or these images sort of advertising the kind of ideology of the state. I wondered whether you're aware of anything like that happening in Czechoslovakia.
Like your pop art?
Well, not necessarily pop art, because the term wouldn't apply, though kind of people use it. But the artists, I'm just kind of interested, who are the artists that are creating this art, and do they create any other forms of art, or are there artists that are trying to kind of use these styles of art and kind of subvert them in their practice? I mean, I'm not aware of it.
Okay. Well, if you are interested in the graphic designers, most of those who created those posters were actually people who considered themselves to be artisans, not like a big artist. But of course, there were some artists who were hired for some special campaigns, especially for export companies, like artist Jiří Trnka, who created advertising calendars for the big companies like Škoda or Java. Mm-hmm. But those were the works used for export, not for the internal market. The advertising for the internal market was usually created by those graphic designers.
Okay, so there was a sort of separation with graphic design, and they didn't really overlap at all.
Of course, from time to time, you can find a work of some famous artist, but not mostly in advertising, but in propaganda field. For example, mm-hmm. I have the poster for agriculture propaganda, which was designed by Karel Malich, mm-hmm. which is quite unique, I would say. But there are also some other artists like Karel Swolinski, but they basically made posters for health propaganda or agriculture, but not advertising. Advertising was like it was solely created by the people who worked in the advertising companies.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Hi, Sándor Horváth, Budapest. Thank you for your paper. I have two questions. First is going to the comparative perspective. So I'd like to ask something about this conference, which you finished your paper about this 1957 conference, which was a starting point also for the consumption campaign for all of the Eastern European countries. And I think it's the article, and there is a book from Susan E. Reed about the kitchen debate, which is a very important one regarding this question. And could you elaborate more about how do you feel about the other countries' advertising industry, how it's related to Czechoslovakia, and what were their perception and how they perceived the Czechoslovakian consumption and so on. My second question is going to the direction that the period we are talking about is a very short one. So the strict Stalinist period is, if we count, sometimes 4 years, sometimes 8 years, so it's a very short period. What about the continuities in the people who were working in the advertising and propaganda industry, if we call it are there any continuities in the pre-war area that could be really interesting if the people who were working already in the advertising industry were later also working in the propaganda, and what happened with them in the 60s? So a longer perspective probably for the others could also help to understand how we understand this so-called socialist realism. I'm coming from the social history field, so not from art history. That's why I have this specific question. Thanks.
Okay, I'm also a social historian, so I understand your question. the first the conference actually should the plan was to do the conference for socialist advertising, to do it in Budapest, but there was a revolution, so there was like that also Hungary was seen as a developed country for advertising, but the Czechoslovakia for some short period of time was considered to be most developed because it used all of the range of the media. For example, there were also rich production of the commercials for movies, and those creators also participated in festival in Cannes in France in 1955 and 56, which is quite unique. But the difference started to be seen at the end of the 50s. Because, for example, in Eastern Germany, there were still private companies who produced advertising. Those were especially the neon product producers were private, not state-owned. That's the difference to Czechoslovakia, where everything was state-owned. There was also advertising production in the Poland, but it was, I would say, rather poor for a long time. And there were most of the contacts for Czech producers were with Eastern Germans. The second question was about the continuities. That's a really good question. There was a survey in the 60s on the people who work in the field, because there were like 30,000 people who work in advertising in Czechoslovakia, and they realized that most of the people who work in this field are actually people who started in the 20s and the 30s in the private companies like Baťa shoe company or Schicht company, the chemical producer. And they basically continue through the 40s and the 50s. They just change the subject of what they do. And they came back to the advertising in 1954, 55, and continue to be in the field until the 70s, when the new generation came. Especially Josef Solar is a great example. He's like a Czechoslovak version of the Forrest Gump. He started in Baťa shoe company in 1925, then started his own company in the 1930s, was arrested by Gestapo and interrogated, but stayed alive. And after war, he again started his own private company, which he disbanded in 1948, and joined the health propaganda company. But after 1954, he came back to advertising. But what was the most interesting thing about him is that in 1968 he actually published two English books in the United States, and those books became New York Times bestsellers, and he was allowed to travel to the United States on a tour with the books. And he actually came back in the 70s after occupation and continued to work in the advertising field until 80s. So it's like a man who lived through the ages, and he was like considered to be founding father of the advertising in Czechoslovakia. Okay. But there were also other people who started in the 30s in big companies like Java or Škoda, and continued in the 50s and the 60s.
Okay, thanks.
I wanted to ask about commodities.
Commodities.
I mean, that was the question that was initiated by forgot. Yeah. By Tomasz, yes, that's right. So, we could not help noticing that there were some adverts for commodities, mm-hmm. including perfumes. Mm-hmm. So, I can't remember actually Polish posters. There were advertisements of perfumes in Czechoslovakia in 1950, and I can't remember, maybe I'm totally wrong, so do correct me. I don't remember Polish posters with advertising perfumes in the 1950s. So there is a completely different status of this kind of luxury commodity in Czechoslovakia. If I'm right, but perhaps I'm wrong, so I'm waiting for you correcting me and saying that yes, there were some interesting modernist posters advertising perfumes in Poland at that time. I'm perplexed by that because you said, you know, because we know about the communist propaganda that would be the whole industry of advertisement would be turned into promoting the system. But how about the commodities? How did they survive? You know, how did they... there were commodities. Yeah. We know that they were shops, they were perfumes which were being sold in the 1940s, in the 1950s, etc., etc. So this is actually undefined, not very well-defined question, but... it is this relationship between commodities yeah, well, and advertisements.
As was said yesterday by Maria Klimešová, Czechoslovakia was not so much destroyed by the war. And even before war, the country was quite developed. I think it was like a 10th richest country in the world. And there was a large production of the consumer products already in the 1930s. And in 1948, it's considered that between 15 to 20% of the population were middle class, and those middle class people also voted for the Communist Party, and Communist Party actually knew this, so they knew that they had to still produce the same products as before war, and also the structure of the Czech economy is a little bit different than in Poland or Hungary. We have. Long tradition of the light industry in the Czechoslovakia, and those perfumes and the hygienic products were produced by former Schicht company from Ústí nad Labem, later called Setuza, and they had actually large advertising department already in the 30s, because the company is actually the what we know today as a Unilever, the famous company. So they were internationally connected. So it just continued to produce the same products after war, because it's chemicals and it was easily accessible for the state.
Yes, but they were advertised, you know,
yes,
because
yes.
There was a production of perfumes. I mean, for instance, fashion, because the mm-hmm. the other poster was about fashion, mm-hmm. and fashion would be promoted in in all social people's yeah. republics. But the perfume is something different. Mm-hmm. You don't need to you don't need it in
yeah,
order.
Yeah, well,
it, in a way, it is really an excess. It is surplus.
In Czechoslovakia, there were two types of the market. From 1949, there was a so-called bounded market and the free market. And the government wanted people to spend more money on the free market, that they can amaze the finance for the rebuilding of the state. And the chemical production was actually the easy one, so they wanted people to spend on these perfumes mm-hmm. and other stuff. But people say, okay, we can't eat perfumes and the soaps, so that mm-hmm. that was the problem. Okay.
Interesting. Yes. Good.
But it was not a poster in the street. It was advertising in the frame of a journal.
Journal.
On
yeah,
the
yeah.
back side of the journal, so
yeah, yeah.
it was not so. And what about the style? I think it repeats absolutely the advertising from the late 30s and of the wartime and of the second half of 40s. It is no too progressive as design.
Yeah, that was a big problem when the advertising was like rehabilitated, that the creators actually started with the same style. They stopped in 1948, or they continue it, but they did not develop it. And in the West, there was already new style of the advertising with more photographs, and in Czechoslovakia, it was still a little bit old school. And anytime they travel abroad, they feel that they are like a backward. They don't develop in the style.
Thank you very much for all this material and for introducing other actors like the trade unions or the factories. And I think they are very, very important actors for the creation of images. And I had two question or remarks. The first will be, it is really interesting visual material, because it alludes to real problem, and we can practically see every social issue through this advertisement in reverse. Like recruitment, one of the big issues in the 20s, that people, there are huge turnover in the factories, so factories have real problem to keep workers, and they need to recruit constantly people. And I was wondering if you have also elements, posters, or about other problems like safety at work, and if there's something like a visual culture, a visual propaganda to about safety, and because we know that it was very dangerous in the 50s, and things about training, qualification of workers inside factory, how they get qualification inside factory for all these workers who, for some of them, came to the countryside and were not trained in school. That was the first question about safety and training. And the second question about the visual culture. So we know all the debates about this notion of visual culture and the criticism. We can criticize the fact that we unify this different kind of images in one category. So that's the question. Is there one socialist visual culture in the 50s? And with all the material that you saw, with this red corner, this wallpaper journal on the wall, do you see visual regularities, things like in the way of displaying text, of displaying images? Is there something regular, repetitive, or do you see more variation than repetition?
Okay, the first question. Yes, there was a production of the safety posters. It was mostly organized by the labor unions. They had the Department of the Promotion.
And they still exist today, these posters?
Yes. Well, not the this promotion department, yeah. But the labor unions exist, and they have their own wonderful archive in Czech Republic.
We want to see that.
Yeah. They have wonderful archive of the photography and the journals. So it was produced by the labor unions and a little bit by the state companies like the Sanitas, but there were others who were like producing the safety posters. Mm-hmm. The second question was about the regularities. Well, I think there is much more. I would talk about the ambivalence and the hybridity, because of course there were some rules, but not everyone followed those rules. You can find in the journals that some agitators are actually a little bit angry on some managers of the big companies that they still produce more advertising than this culture promotion for workers' councils, and they want to change it. So there was not like a one rule, we are doing just this and not that. So it was more about the setting the borders, but what's behind it was on the different players.
Any more questions or remarks? If there are none, then thank you very much again. And thanks. And now we are having a lunch break until 2:00. Yes? Okay. So see you again at 2:00. Thank you.